because it was bilateral, it was all my joints, including in my arms. My favorite was one emergency room visit. They sent me home with crutches. And I was like, awesome, except I can't really use my arms either.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 341 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we get started today, I just want to talk about the Coterie for a minute. If you're looking for help with your running, whether it's, you know, you're looking to improve goals wise as far as times or distances or things like that, or you need some help staying accountable and staying consistent, or whatever else it might be, the Coterie might be an option for you. Now, I'm not going to say that the Coterie is right for everyone, but I think it's a pretty cool option, that kind of hybrid program that offers custom and one-on-one training, or it offers a training plan created for you, and also offers a kind of team environment. And the team aspect has been picking up a lot lately, which is really cool to see. And there's a lot more banter and back and forth and having a good time. And that's kind of what we're going for. And it's also cool to see that good time and hard work paying off, because we've had a lot of PRs this fall, and it's just been a lot of fun to be a part of. So if you're interested in something like that, and you want to find out more about the Coterie and find out if maybe it might be right for you, check out the website, dizruns.com/Coterie. That's C-O-T-E-R-I-E. And as always, if you have any questions about the Coterie, or about if you think that it, you know, if you're curious whether it might be right for you, let me know. And I'll be happy to answer your questions. Honestly, I'm not going to try to sell you. I'm not going to try to pitch you. I'm just going to answer your question. So, you know, we've had folks that are beginners, and folks that have been running for a while and are a little bit more serious, and everything in between. And it's a cool mix. So if that's something that you might be interested in, again, dizruns.com/Coterie. And now let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today has one of those stories that borders almost on the unbelievable. 10 years ago, due to an attack by an autoimmune disease, she found herself in the hospital for a week and was told she would never be able to run again. Fast forward to just a couple of weeks ago, and she was finishing her 10th half marathon of 2016 and her 53rd half overall. And from what I can tell, she's not planning on throwing in the towel on her running career anytime soon either. So it's a pleasure to be able to go a few easy miles today with Miss Gretchen Schoenstein. Thanks for joining us today, Gretchen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Denny. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And guys, if you want to check out Gretchen's blog or connect with her on social media or anything like that, the places to do that, the website, blog, whatever you want to call it, is wonderwoman.com. And on Instagram and Twitter, she's got the same handle both places, which is always convenient. And that's just @RunGrateful. And I'll have the links to both of those, or both social media handles and her website, and anything else that makes sense to link to during the conversation today in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/341. So Gretchen, the way we always start off on the show is with a pretty simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a simple and straightforward answer. And if I'm honest, I think your answer, I can probably guess it, but I'm still going to ask anyway, because sometimes it's a curveball, and it's always a fun place to just start. And that is to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
So you got a few minutes. So without a doubt, my favorite distance is the half, or more appropriately 13.1 miles, because it's not half of anything. And that's something that, we can talk about. And so, yeah, as you mentioned in the intro, just this last Sunday, actually Sunday night, which is an interesting, I've never run a 13.1 at night, but, ran my 53rd over 6.5 years. And, you know, a couple of weeks before that, on October 8th, I ran my 50th. half. Mm. And that was really incredibly meaningful. And, you know, I was writing about a lot of this recently, and just this morning I was writing about the Vegas, one at night. And I just was like, I cannot believe that I just ran 10 in 1 year. And especially, I just ran 5 since September 18th. And wow. I actually had a flare up of, some autoimmune stuff this summer. And so the idea that I could run 1, let alone get to number 50, because number 49 was in September, and let alone do 5, and, you know, I guess it's 5 weeks, is pretty, I'm kind of blown away by that. And it just really makes me appreciate what the body is ultimately capable of, including when you pair it with mental and emotional preparation and guidance and growth. And that, you know, I mean, I know it's used a lot, but the kind of whole mind-body connection and how important that is to my running. So, yeah, and I'm happy to, you know, share more about, you know, why I started running 6.5 years ago in the first place, and why number 50 was so important. I'm just in this moment, I'm really appreciating, yeah, I ran 10 in 2016. This was a big year to be able to run 10 and to hit that number 50. And now already be at 53. is awesome, and just appreciating it right now.
Yeah, there's so much to get into and unpack. And so since that was the last thing you mentioned, I mean, like, just from 6.5 years ago. So kind of set the story. So before, sure. About 10 years ago, if I did my research correctly, you weren't the biggest runner. So when they told you when the doctors told you you couldn't run, it was like, all right, whatever. I mean, am I close? Am I on base or on ball?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the short story is, so to speak, is 10 years ago, I've battled autoimmune diseases my whole life since I was a kid, been diagnosed with various ones that are life changing or at least life altering in some way. So it's just something I've kind of always learned to live with. And kind of rise from whenever they knock me down. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, one in particular really knocked me down. My joints and my lungs blew up. I don't know if anybody remembers moon boots, après ski, but that's what my legs looked like.
Wow.
Only they were not, I couldn't take them off. And my lungs blew up. I had a really hard time breathing. And I still have a lot of residual damage from all of that. But, you know, the doctors didn't know what was going on. None of us knew what was going on. It was a really scary time, to say the least. And every single day that passed got harder and harder to walk. So cutting that short is I basically couldn't walk for about 6 weeks. Ended up, I went to the emergency room multiple times. They kept sending me home. I think my favorite was, because it was bilateral, it was all my joints, including in my arms. My favorite was one emergency room visit. They sent me home with crutches. I was like, awesome, except I can't really use my arms either. So, which I can laugh about now. And in the moment, it wasn't a lot of laughter. I just would stare at the crutches in my house and be like, what am I supposed to do with those? So eventually I ended up in the hospital for 8 days, which is obviously not normal. Especially nowadays, they try to get you out as soon as possible. And I was on a morphine drip for that whole hospital trip, which I will say the morphine drip is not necessarily a bad thing. That part was kind of fun. but yeah, I was in exquisite pain. It was really tough to move and breathe, and it was really scary. It was very unknown. I was at a teaching hospital, so thank God for that, because they really, were able to run all the tests, but it was a bit of a mystery. I was a house episode. And eventually I was diagnosed with a disorder called sarcoidosis. And I already have Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid disorder. And I've had, I think at this point, the way autoimmune diseases work is there's over 80 of them. And once you're diagnosed with one, you're usually diagnosed, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, six more throughout your life. Some of them are temporary. Some of them last for your whole life and you just learn to manage them. And so it was good that this was the diagnosis because they had narrowed it down to that or, lymphoma. And my father passed away from lymphoma, brain cancer, many years earlier. So you can imagine the fear that went through, my family. So when I started to get mobility back, you know, I still was on the couch for months afterwards, and I started to get mobility back, and they said, you know, you're never going to run again. And at that point I was still young and, you know, relatively speaking. And I thought, you know, that's okay. I'm not much of a runner anyway. I think maybe, you know, I'd done some 5Ks and a 10K, and, you know, I was more of I go to the gym type of thing. And so it didn't really hit me that was a big deal. until about 4 years later. Well, so what I did in those 4 years after the diagnosis, after I got out of the hospital, is I just kind of lived cautiously. Mm. Anytime I would get something that would feel sore or painful, I immediately went to this place of, uh-oh, it's back. Something's wrong, or maybe it's something new. And I tell you, that is not an awesome way to live, to say the least. So when about 4 years later, and it's, there's been some stories about, in reports, articles about this, that's the word I was looking for, where I've shared my story and, you know, my personal and professional life kind of upended at the same time, mm-hmm. shall we say, in early 2010. And for me, I was in a free fall. I was in chaos. And I remembered training for a 10K and appreciating having that goal and working backwards from it of every day I have to do a little something mm-hmm. to be able to make that goal be a good experience. So I thought, you know, my life's in free fall right now. I don't know what's going on. It was personal and professional. One I had decided to leave professionally, a job I'd been in for a long time. And the other was, my partner of 10 years, he said, I don't want to do this anymore. And so to have that happen at the same time was, blah.
Right.
I will say, you know, it's like the two rugs were pulled out from under at the same time. So you're kind of falling, and the landing on, I'm going to train for a race, suddenly put a lot of things into perspective. And I was able to say, all right, that's what I'm going to do. And I signed up for a race. And I sometimes wonder, because people are like, why didn't you sign up for a 5 or 10K right. first? I signed up for a half marathon, which in hindsight, I'm like, oh dear God, that was a big one. But I think I needed it to be a big goal. Mm. I needed it to be something that really would take that focus. And it was not easy, because, I was scared physically, of what I was capable of or not, and what I had the capacity to do. And then from, from a daily perspective, it was, tough because things were so upended. So I really looked at it. What was brilliant about it is if I ran 20 minutes a day, leading up to that one half marathon, I kind of thought, well, at least during those 20 minutes, and any runner who knows this feeling, you know what I'm talking about. In that 20 minutes, I thought anything was possible. Mm. In that 20 minutes that I was starting to run again, I was like, all right, if I can do this, maybe I can do the half marathon. If I can do that, what else is possible? So it wasn't easy. I got nervous. Most of my doctors were like, what in blank diddy blank are you doing? You know, you can't do it. And of course, I'm one of those people, you tell me I can't and I will. Mm. But so I trained for it, and I ran my first half marathon in April 2010. And it was a brilliant experience. It was very fulfilling, and it just left me with a deep sense of gratitude of what I do have the ability to do. Mm-hmm. And that, no offense to the doctors, but maybe they were wrong. And it really felt like a way to prove them wrong and to prove myself wrong, from having lived kind of fear-based for 4 years and not stepping into what could be possible. And then the very, short tie up to that is, and then on Sunday I ran my 53rd, which was not the plan at all. I did not run that first one thinking someday I'm going to run 50 of these things. In fact, even at, once I hit number 30, which again is a big leap, it sounds absurd because there's a lot of races and stories in there. But even when I was at number 30, I wasn't thinking about 50. That wasn't the plan. I was taking it race by race, one race at a time. I travel for these things. I collect stories. That's why I do them, because there's so many people out there. Like you said, every runner has a story, and it's true. Every single runner has a story, and there's just something about this particular journey. And after that first one, I ran, I think, four more in 2010. And then my friends were joking with me, and supportive too, but they were like, are you okay? How was it? And I was like, it felt really good. And I said, oh, really? And I said, yeah, it was easier than I expected. And then they said, oh, well, if it's so easy, why don't you double that next year? And so I accepted the challenge and realized the next year was 2011. which 11 is one of my lucky numbers, as is 8, which is why Sunday I'm like, okay, that's good, because 3 + 5 = 8. I'm always doing numbers in my head. But so I ran 11 in 2011. Mm. And even there, that was awesome and also incredibly difficult, but I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it at all. People ask me all the time, you know, if you knew then what you know now about running 50, would you still do it? And, you know, I took a moment to think about it. I wanted to be thoughtful about my approach and my answer. And all of the miles, all of the races, all of the airplane trips, the getting up at, you know, 3:30 to eat a banana because your race is at 6:30, you know, all the sleep deprivation, the soreness. You know, I think Epsom salts and acupuncture are the best things ever invented. you know, all of those things, all of the physical and mental and emotional push, as well as the highs, I wouldn't trade any of it. I would do the exact same journey if I could. So.
When, like you said, at one, you know, you finished the first one, and the goal wasn't to get to some number. It was to do one. And even at 30, the like you said, the goal wasn't to get to 50 or whatever. Is that still the case, or do you have a little bit of a number out there of you know, it would be cool to get to triple digits, it would be cool to get to 75, or do you not allow that thought to creep into your mind?
You know, it depends on where I am. Like, I mean, at the point, I think at about, I want to say maybe 38, knowing that I do, you know, anywhere from, this is going to sound absurd. It sounds absurd in my own ear before I've said it, but as few as 6 in a year, or as many as, you know, I ran 10 this year. Mm-hmm. I originally was not planning to run 3 more after, but then after number 50, but then I was going to Denver to be with friends and run the Denver race. And then my dear friend Don said, you know, well, if you're running 8, you know, there's the rock and roll, you get the big heavy metal, why don't you just run 2 more and then you get it? And I was like, okay. Which, you know, but at the same time, like, there's a rhythm to having enough races in a year where you train and you go up and you prep and then you taper and then you have the race and then you recover and then you start again. Like, there's a rhythm to that that I really appreciate. But to answer your question, when I was at 38, I thought, wait a second, 50 is not that far away. If I look at it as doing, you know, 6 or 7 over the next 2 years or less than 2 years. And so then I worked backwards and I thought, okay, I want to do number 50 in the fall because, you know, spring and fall, there's a lot of races to choose from. Mm-hmm. So I set that up and then I worked backwards from there. And so I ran 7. Or sorry, I ran 8 in 2015 so that I could run 7 in 2016 with the idea that I could space out the 6 leading up to number 50 and have it be a really enjoyable experience. And the topper to that is, and I get a little emotional every time I think about it. I did not plan this, but the week that I ran number 50 is the same week it's the same time 10 years to the week that I was laying in the hospital room on a morphine drip. I did not plan that. No way at it. How could I have? But it was really, really profound. I actually wore, when I moved back to California about a year and a half ago, I found in a box my hospital ID bracelet from those, from that week in the hospital. And I had my D tag, my timing chip on my right shoe, and I tied my hospital bracelet to my left shoe. And I've worn that actually the 3 races since then, and every single race someone notices it and they ask about it. And I'm actually considering continuing to wear it because it grounds for me the reason I do this at all. You know, and so back to the question of, you know, what's my goal, what's my next goal? You know, I mean, I make little ones along the way because I think if I were to sit here and say, now I want to get to 100, that's so far away. Right. That seems really daunting and kind of, it's not as motivating as to make little goals along the way. It's kind of like, think of it this way, and I know a lot of runners think about this, at mile one, I'm not thinking about the finish line. I can't, right? I gotta be at mile one. I can think about mile two, but I'm taking them every mile is its own experience. So I think for me at this point, I have little ones that, maybe are personal to me, like next year is the 20th rock and roll race. And so, if I look at, I'm at number 53 overall right now, but they're not all rock and rolls, but in about four or five of them, they will be. So the fact that I'll run my 50th rock and roll during their 20th anniversary, I like that goal. I like the idea of, my dad passed away when he was 64. So I want to get to 65 half marathons as some sort of tribute to, he never saw, the age of 65. And at this point for me, I really look at each race as what story for someone else do I get to bear witness to? Or do I get to support? I hear so many stories of people, and why they run and what it means to them to run, that really at this point for me is like, I'm not going to stop running. There's actually, there's a band called A Great Big World, and they have a song called Won't Stop Running. Mm. And one of their lead singers was diagnosed with MS, which is an autoimmune disease, 9 years ago. And they said, in 7 years, you'll be in a wheelchair. Well, he's still up. He's not very much not in a wheelchair. He's quite healthy and bounding all over the stage. And they did this song called Won't Stop Running. And my sister texted me at their concert this summer. She's like, oh my God, you have to listen to this song. This is amazing. And so I got connected with a band and they said I could use it as my theme song for number 50. And they tweeted out like, congrats on your 50th, because they get it. Like, autoimmune diseases affect over 24 million Americans, but it's often that they're suffering in silence because you can't always see it.
Right.
There's not a lot of awareness around autoimmune diseases. So I feel this calling now that I kind of feel like my passion meets my purpose through my running and kind of how I found what I do and how fulfilling that is, and to hear other people's stories, whether it's, having left a long abusive marriage and running her first half marathon, and what that means to her, and her finish time doesn't matter, a woman in her 60s who was battling cancer and didn't start running until she was, late 40s, and running is what helped her, beat it. Or, everybody's got a story, and it's just, I don't know. It's incredible. I absolutely love the running community. There's nothing quite like it. You see these races and there's just, it's all ages, all abilities, all body types, all finish times. It's just, I absolutely love it. It's so incredibly, embracing.
Yes. And welcoming. Yes, so completely agree. It's always, when you talk to non-runners and they're always like, well, I couldn't do it because, whatever their reason is. And it's like, man, if you just go spectate a race, go any type of halfway big sized race, and you'll see people that you wouldn't think there's any chance of them going a mile, let alone 13 or 26 or whatever the distance might be. And, whatever your excuse is, like you realize, like, and running's not for everybody. I get that. But, whatever you're hinged on as far as, oh, I can't run because, like, you can find somebody who's running in spite of. And so you can, you have to either come up with a different excuse or just admit that you just don't want to. And that's fine. But right. Your excuse is no longer valid once you spectate a race, pretty much.
That's so true. That's so true. I've actually gone a number of times to go watch a race as opposed to run it. And then, my excuse is I've got long legs. So I do have a tendency to finish on the earlier side. And so what I usually try to do is then stay at the finish line and cheer in other runners. And, if there's a race nearby, I will go cheer, without running. And that's incredibly fulfilling too. And I am that person. I cry at every finish line, and not just for having crossed it myself, but, you can see the stories of people, especially as they're getting close to the finish line or crossing their starting line, because no one can do that for you. There's only one way that your foot's going to get over that starting line, and that's by you doing it. Someone's not doing it for you. And same thing with the finish line. And to see all those stories come across, and you're so right. There's, you go to one race and spectate, and it's kind of like, I want some of that. Mm-hmm. I want to be a part of that, you know? So it's pretty amazing. And, you know, I agree with you. Running's not for everybody. I mean, there are some, you know, physical issues that will, without a doubt, of course, make it super difficult for people to run. At the same time, like, you know, I think back to a friend of mine, he was 70 years old. He had brain surgery. 2 years later, he qualified for the Boston Marathon. Mm-hmm. Or a very dear friend of mine, Steve, who is a double amputee from Afghanistan. And I think he might be at number 40 in terms of how many half marathons he's run since becoming a double amputee. So, you know, and there are times where he has to take breaks and not run, and take care of his physical health. But, there's a lot more that we can overcome, I think, mm-hmm. than we realize. And I hope sometimes I'm testament to that for people as well. You know, it does require persistence and resilience and, but there's something about running that feeds that, you know, mm-hmm. it's so generous in how much it gives back to, I can see results immediately. You know, I'm one of those people. I'm like, look, if you run down to your mailbox, you call yourself a runner. Like, there's yes. no, like, every step counts, every step matters. No matter how fast or slow or wobbly or messy or clumsy, every single step counts. So, and I don't know about you, but I'm very much, a lot of it is how you approach it. I personally, I know that there's a whole, there's a lot of thought out there of, like, you know, I hear all the time, people are like, I hate running, but I do it anyway. Running's stupid, but I do it anyway. And for me, I can't do that approach. Mm. I really have to look at it as, like, it's not, I don't want to be in battle with it. I don't want to be constantly fighting it. And because there's a resistance in that. And then I'm probably, for me, I know I wouldn't get the full benefit.
Right.
Out of it, if I approached it from that way of, like, it sucks, it hurts all the time, I hate it, well, good God, why am I doing it? Mm-hmm. You know? So I, for me, and clearly that works as motivation for some people, because they do it, and they keep running. But for me, it really is about approaching it as, like, it's a generative gift. I run because I can, I run because I get to, like, every step is a gift. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's on my mind because I saw a sign in Vegas that said running is stupid. And I was like, yeah, that's not super helpful. Right. You know, I was like, I really, like, how about I'm proud of you, or, you know, you're right. Awesome, or keep going, or something. So it's just, it's endlessly fascinating, even if to 53 of them.
Yes, yes. Flashing back to the first one and to when, you know, like you said, the doctors were going, no, like, this is stupid. You're crazy. What are you doing? What was the concern? Was the concern that your body couldn't handle it, that it would cause things to flare up again? I mean, where on that, you know, time, or not timeline, but where on that scale of these, this is why you shouldn't do it. Were they placing you?
It was that it could cause a flare up. Part of it was the amount of damage. The concern was the amount of damage that had been done to my lungs and my joints, you know, and causing pain. So part of it was, you know, because my body feeds on inflammation. So, if I, you know, it's something I watch from a diet perspective. It's something I'm constantly checking. And sometimes sometimes I don't have control over it. Like, you know, this summer I had a flare up and inflammation just took over my body and I couldn't run and it affects everything. So, part of it was, we're afraid, like, you're going to instantly go into pain again. Because I was still managing it at that point. Mm-hmm. Part of it was it might flare up. And then part of it was, like, we don't know exactly the extent of the damage that had been done. So, mm-hmm. you know, for all I knew, I didn't have the strength to be able to do it. So I am one of those runners that I do a lot of cross training. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of hiking, do a lot of strengthening around my knees, because those were some joints that, you know, I thought were permanently damaged. And they still do ache, not when it rains, but just, you know, I still have issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I do a lot of yoga and jump rope and a lot of strength training, core training, all that kind of stuff, so that I'm giving my body a more fair shot.
Right.
of keeping up with all of what I'm pushing it to do.
So basically you're doing all those things that all of us should do. We just make excuses for why we don't do all of the strength training and the yoga and the all the cross training, because we just would rather run.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I kind of look at it like, given everything my body's been through, it's always a choice, but I kind of feel like I don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. If I don't do this, I can't run.
Right. Right.
So it's pretty simple for me from that standpoint. So, so yeah, I mean, you know, the first few times I did races, I'm at a point now where I feel pretty comfortable with every race I do. I mean, I just a few weeks ago, my Denver race was a disaster. I've never had this happen before. We've all seen those runners where they're the super wobbly, need people to hold them up, and they're wandering all over the course. Something just shut down in their body. That happened to me with race number 51. Here I am. Supposedly I know what I'm doing and everything, you know, all of these experiences. And because I've had some immune system issues and I'm dealing with inflammation and I haven't normalized yet. Something flared, something happened. And, it was really scary, especially a week after coming off number 50 and the high of finishing that. So it's like, but for me, it doesn't stop me. I'm like, okay, let's go again. I want to try again. I want to calm the body down, see what may or may not have happened, if I can figure out the answer, and then try again. It doesn't stop me,
right,
from that standpoint. But yeah, it's a lot of awareness. A lot of it is staying aware and being curious, and being willing to try something new. Okay, this isn't working. Let me try something else. You know, I had a 2011, 12, and 13 for about 3.5 years. I had a right hip issue that almost never went away, and it's gone now. I mean, a lot of acupuncture and a lot of PT, and you know, mostly acupuncture, and kind of changing my approach. But for me, being able to have this like long view now of like, okay, I'm so glad that I didn't quit when my hip was really hurting. Right. You know, I'm so glad that I didn't just give up and say, you know what, I guess this is the new normal. Cause that's what I did for 4 years. I think that I'm able to draw from that. Mm-hmm. Is that for 4 years, me and the doctors, we were like, all right, this is the new normal, you know, live this very cautious life. And I've now had multiple experiences where I've kind of stayed curious. I'm like, I'm going to knock one more time on that door, because I don't think that there's nothing behind it. And then sure enough, something happens and I'm like, all right, let's keep going.
Mm-hmm. You, I mean, obviously, you know, from the first one until now, it's something that you can do, something that you've figured out, how to, you know, adapt. And like you said, all the cross training, all the preventative stuff that you do to keep the inflammation under control, to keep your body responding. Have you noticed, and I'm going to assume you have, but I'm definitely going to ask to make sure, have you noticed that the running has helped, or has it just kind of been able to stay, you know, kind of keep homeostasis, or keep, you know, not helped, but not hurt with the autoimmune issues?
My belief, and I, the longer this goes on, the more I really truly believe this, is I think that I'm actually guarding against anything, or not anything, but more flare-ups or worse flare-ups or new diagnoses by keeping my body this strong. Mm-hmm. I had a reporter, actually, the way he said it, he's like, when you've been betrayed, and he took my story, but these are his words. He's like, when you've been betrayed by your body, you can guard against it by making it extra strong. Mm-hmm. And that's, those are not exactly his words. He said it far more eloquently than I just did, but that's essentially, I think, how I look at it. And I don't know that I was necessarily conscious of taking that as a specific approach from the beginning, but it does feel like, you know, aside from this past summer and fall, I had, you know, my health had been pretty good for a number of years. I mean, I work with a naturopath and I go to acupuncture, and I, you know, I have things that I have to, you know, I had pre-diabetes numbers 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm very proactive in terms of taking care of my health, from that standpoint. But you know, I look at it like, how much worse would it be if I weren't running? How much worse would it be if I weren't doing the strength training? Like, I'd probably be like an amoeba at this point, you know, just like, without a doubt, I feel much stronger. And I do think that it contributes to better health for me, given my body's propensity for autoimmune issues. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that it's made a big, very positive difference.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, thankfully I don't have any of those type of issues, but it just seems like so much more, with the research that I've seen and just folks that I've talked to, whether it's runners or just other folks with other different autoimmune type of issues, where it's like the more, you know, at first maybe activity really can hurt, but the more you mm-hmm. can, once you get over that hump, it's like whatever, dancing, lifting weights, swimming, whatever it is, whatever floats your boat, running. That, you know, once you get over that initial kind of shock to your body, it definitely seems like it's, you know, nine positive steps or nine steps forward for a half a step back, maybe at most. So it's well worth it to push through and find out what works for you, but then stick with it.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's interesting. I've not necessarily thought about it specifically in this way. So my mind's kind of rolling right now, and it's cool because I'm, you know, if I look at it, like it was not those first 3 years, 10, 11, 12 in this whole journey were tough mm-hmm. in terms of these races. And 13 wasn't easy either. Just even in the last, let's see, year and a half, I'm seeing times from 2011. Mm-hmm. Like I had my PR in February of 2011. And I came within 2 minutes of that last October.
Wow.
September of 2010, I ran Rock and Roll Philadelphia. And then in October of 2015, I ran it again. So 5 years later, which means I'm also 5 years older, I ran it 5 minutes faster.
Wow.
So I wonder, like, to use the idea that you talked about, like, I wonder if, like, even for me, and I'm just apparently incredibly stubborn, that maybe it was even like 3 years of struggle in a way. And sometimes more than a half a step back. Sometimes it was 2 steps forward, 9 steps back.
Right.
But there was something in there that I kept pushing and I kept saying, I still think this is it. And now I kind of feel like I'm on the other side of that curtain. And it's like, I mean, just my 48th race late June, I ran in 1:48. And I was like, wait, how, what? I mean, that's Seattle. That's hilly. Like, how is that even possible? I wonder if I've almost crossed that. I'm thinking like Malcolm Gladwell, like whether it's 10,000 hours or the tipping point, right. You know, I've kind of crossed that tipping point now where it's like, yeah, actually now my body's settled into, I mean, it may have taken a few years, maybe longer than I expected, but now it's like, okay, I got this. Like, this is it. This is my thing. This is how I keep strong.
Right. Well, it's obviously working for you. So keep on keeping on. You mentioned early, and I just want to touch on this for just a second, but, Vegas being a night race, what was your take on running a night race? Cause I've, up until this year, when Disney kind of threw a curveball, they had a night race in Orlando every year, the Wine and Dine Half Marathon, and I ran six of those, and really enjoyed that you know, start at 10 o'clock at night type of thing and finish, you know, somewhere right around midnight, depending on how many pictures you stopped for with characters and whatnot. but what was your take on running A, you know, just a night race in general, and then B, you know, Vegas at night, which is even probably a little bit more crazy than just your typical night type of race.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I live north of San Francisco in Sonoma, and we're for the most part warm here. And I do a lot of training runs, you know, in the evening because I like to kind of shake off my day that way. But then every race I've run is in the morning. And so I thought, oh, this will be no big deal. It'll be warm and it'll be at the end of the day like I normally do. I just don't normally do 13.1 miles at right. the end of the day. So I will tell you, I think there was some form of sensory deprivation doing things in the dark. I mean, that alone was bizarre. Now, granted, we didn't start at 10 o'clock at night. We started at, I think my wave was started at 4:30. So it was dusk and then night. One very cool thing, it was the supermoon. evening. So the whole time I'm running down the strip on my right hand side, the supermoon is rising up in the sky. It was just, I was like, that alone right there, that was worth being in a casino for 3 days. So, but yeah, so it was, the sensory deprivation of nighttime and I wear prescription sunglasses and I can't wear them obviously at night, 'cause then I really wouldn't see anything. So it was just, it was different from that standpoint. It kind of was, you know, I was like, your depth perception is different. Your peripheral vision is different. So that was interesting. It started warmer and then got cooler. But the thing that I thought of mostly when I got started is I was like, I have a whole new appreciation and respect for athletes who have games in the afternoon and the evenings, because you have to get up in the morning and you have your routine and you're still going all day long, kind of getting game ready. I mean, I use like a lot of people, I use Fitbit and I had my steps in like at 2, you know, just cause you're walking everywhere. So I had that in my head. I was like, have I been on my feet for too long? Cause think about it, when I'm, you know, if it's a 7 a.m. race, like, you know, you're up, but you're not on your feet and you're not, your body's not as tired. Your brain's not as tired. Like I get up and I'm just solely focused on the race until it starts. Whereas I had a whole day of, you know, sensory overload, right? 'Cause it's Vegas, but also just, you know, you're taking in a lot of data into your brain and into your body, and physically you're moving a lot more than you normally would before a race. And my routine was different just because it didn't start just right when I got out of bed. So I was fascinated by all of that. I was like, wow, that's a trip to think about. And then you think about all these athletes, you know, from little kids who have night games and college players and professional athletes who have, you know, events at night. And I'm like, wow, it's a whole nother level of how to prepare. That's very different than having an activity in the morning.
Yeah. I talk somewhat regularly about how we as humans are such creatures of habit, even though people think that, oh, I don't like, you know, I like to be willy-nilly and just live life by the seat of my pants. And we really deep down like crave routine, crave structure. And yeah, throwing that curveball of like not having a, you know, wake up, eat whatever you would normally eat and go right to the starting line, as opposed to, wow, I'm eating all day. And what's that going to do for my need to go to the bathroom? And what's that going to do for, like you said, the fatigue of just being on your feet? And even if you're trying to stay off them, you're still going to be more fatigued than you are when you've only been up for an hour and a half. So it's crazy to see how that goes. I'm always curious how people respond when they, you know, get into a night race after however many years and however many races of not doing it at night. It's always a fun thing to try, and some people really dig it and some people are like, oh, I'll never do that again. Where do you stand? Do you stand on either end, or are you kind of in the middle?
I would do it again somewhere else. I'd be curious to see if I have curiosity of like, was my finish time that I'm not happy with, even though I still, you know, I talk a lot about, hey, finish times don't matter. It's crossing the finish line and everything leading up to that. But they still do. I'm still human. I still, you know, compete with myself and all that kind of stuff. I would like to try it again because I'd be curious if it was the night time that affected me, or if it was the sensory overload of being in Vegas and, you know, having, I know they all have great systems in the casinos, but you know, you're sucking on smoke and in the casinos and outside everybody's smoking. And it's a very different environment. So I'd be curious to do a night race somewhere else and see and kind of compare the two experiences. I mean, I'm amazed that in 53 races, it was my first one.
I'm a fan, even though like when I first started it, I was an anti-morning runner. I wasn't, not that I was anti-morning, but just like I wasn't a morning person. So it was like, oh, if I was going to run a race that started at 7, that mean I had to get up at 4:30 or 5 to just try to wake up and have some coffee and like move a little bit. So to have a race that started at 10 o'clock, like shoot, like I could sleep in if I wanted to or whatever, like, you know, loll about and no big deal. But now, shoot, now I'm up at between 3 and 4 most days anyway. So it's like, bring that morning race. No big deal.
Right. Yeah.
But, one other thing that I want to definitely touch on a bit and I wanted to touch on a bit more, but, shoot, we've been going. You're working on a book, which is awesome. It's one of those things that's been on my, you know, list for however long and still haven't started. So I don't know anything about what it's like to work on and write a book, but, what are you doing on that front?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So actually the first draft is with my editor right now. Mm-hmm. And we have a call tomorrow to get it moving. So it's called Finish Line Moments. And it's not 50 chapters of 50 races. Even I wouldn't read that. I mean, but I have, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I do have a blog. I've been writing in it since January of 2011. Kind of capturing the races and the different lessons that I've learned. So really what it is it's about the different pieces of kind of, you know, curiosity and resilience and courage and perseverance and persistence and embracing perspective and compassion and learning how to breathe figuratively, as well as obviously literally, because I had to learn again how to do that. And so it's a lot of stories from my own races, as well as a lot of other people's stories, and the kind of the lessons that I've learned from running all of these. So, you know, and a lot of it is around the concept of half. Mm. You know, even just this last race in Vegas, I had a gentleman who's run, I don't know, over 100 marathons. And I was standing there with a friend of his, and his friend said, "Oh, that's amazing, you know, and what have you." And he said, "Oh, how many halves have you run?" He's like, "Oh, I don't really count those. I don't keep track of them." Mm. And I mean, my heart sank, right? I talked to a woman last summer who she told me that we were approaching one of those races where it's a half and a full. Mm-hmm. And she said to her husband, she asked her husband, she said, "Hey, would you be more proud of me if I was running the full on Sunday instead of just the half?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh my God, people, why do we do this to ourselves?" And I really believe it's because of the word half. Mm-hmm. I'm a language person. And I think just inherently the word half means it's half of something, you know, but we don't call a 5K a half 10K.
Right.
It's a 5K. So yes, technically 13 is half of 26. I get that from a math perspective, from a fact perspective. But you know, when I mentioned that woman who, you know, ran her first half marathon, you shouldn't cross half a finish line.
Right.
You know, I'm not half resilient because of everything I've overcome. And so, I mean, I will never forget being in Denver last year. And a lot of it is also with the word half. It just inherently minimizes or diminishes the accomplishment because people start using words like, "Oh, just the half," or "only, you know, did you run the full or just the half this morning?" Or, "Oh, I'm only running a half today." I hear that all the mm-hmm. time from runners, and I don't even think we hear it.
Right.
And last October, I was at the expo for Rock and Roll Denver, you know, cause the expo is like, it's like kind of the first step of, okay, now I'm getting race ready and right. I'm excited and the buzz and the excitement and everybody and the nerves and what have you. And I walk up to one booth and the gentleman says, "Oh, are you running the half or the full tomorrow?" And in my head, I think, "Oh, that's so great." Like he asked it quote unquote correctly. You know, he didn't say just or in front of the word half. And I said, "Oh, I'm running the half tomorrow." And I said, "In fact," and this is, you know, back when it was number 42, I said, tomorrow will be number 42. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, that's like 21 fulls." And ooh. I was like,
"No, dude,
no, it's 42 halves, you know?" And, I do some speaking sometimes and, I've been introduced as a finish line moment expert. And at this point I've crossed 53 of them. I know how to cross a finish line. And I thought about it on my race. I was like, "Oh my God, this is actually hilarious." Because if I had quote unquote only run 21 fulls, I couldn't be having the experience of having crossed 42 finish lines. Mm-hmm. Like 21 finish lines is fewer than 42 finish lines. So I'm very passionate about this concept around half and it being not good enough. Mm-hmm. Because you haven't asked it, and I'm always prepared for people to ask, especially when they hear, "Oh, you've run 53 halves," all the time, and especially when I was approaching and finishing number 50. It's, "So when are you going to run a full?" Mm. And you know, to your very first question, you know, pulling it back all the way to the beginning, you know, what's your favorite distance? This is my distance. I love 13.1. Right. I know people who are brilliant at 10K. I know people who are passionate about 5K. And I just, it's really important to me. So I talk a lot about that in this book of like, when are we going full out for something, but maybe not giving ourselves enough credit? You know, we're kind of diminishing or giving ourselves half credit for something that really we deserve to recognize as a full achievement and a full accomplishment.
You know, the thought had crossed my mind in preparing for this, and I'll throw myself under the bus, although I wasn't going to ask it, when are you ever going to run a full in a condescending type of way? But has the thought ever, well, I guess maybe first I'll ask, have you ever run a full and had that thought at some point ever crossed your mind of like, I wonder what it's like to go 26 miles on one day, or is that just something that's just never really even appealed to you?
It's definitely crossed my mind. I'd be lying if I said it hadn't. I mean, sometimes it crosses my mind from when I've done a race where it's a half and a full, and God bless the full people when they're running the entire race
with us.
Have to
watch everybody else.
Yeah. And then I'll never forget one where we could actually see the finish line. We were probably at like mile 12.8 or 9. You can see the finish line. And those poor people all had to take a sharp right.
Right.
As we kept going forward, I was like, no, you can just come with us. It's fine. you know, and I always appreciate, you know, when that split does happen in a double race like that, where how many fewer people are running to the right, to the marathon course. I watch those courses. I stick around and cheer on for a lot of the full finishers. Without a doubt, it has crossed my mind. I think about it, you know, certainly having crossed number 50, there's a part of me that's like, that curiosity has risen up again. I have a lot of fear and personal trepidation around it because of everything my body has been through, and that I feel this strong for a 13. But if there's one thing I know from all my friends who do run fulls, is it's not double training. Mm-hmm. It's not double the effort. It's quadruple. You know, it's so much more. It's not just, oh, you run twice as much and then you run a full. There's so much more training that goes into it. And there's so much more care and consideration for your physical body. Because you're out there, you know, two or three times as longer as you would be for a half. So I will, this is very true when I say never say never. You know, you asked how many more halves I'll run, you know, if I have a number in mind. You know, there, I might do a full, and it would be a whole nother experience. I'd really, you know, I'd be curious about it. I don't know if I have the patience out there for 4 hours, but, assuming I could do it in four, you know, but then at the flip side is like, I've also thought about, you know, the people who run the 50 in a full day, you know, I mean, we've all read Born to Run, you know, every runner, you know, it's like you should just get that book every time you buy your pair of running shoes. But you know, I mean, you read that and it's like, oh my God, there's these, you know, these people who run 50 and 100 miles in a day. Again, I think certain bodies are probably built for it better than others. But yeah, I'm never say never. And if it happens, I would imagine it'd be sooner rather than later, just because I'm always curious. And, you know, 100 halves is so far away from now that I don't want that to be the only thing I'm aiming for. I mean, when I crossed number 50, I actually stopped at mile 12 just to walk part of it, because I was like, oh my God, the fact that I'm doing this at all is like absolutely incredible and so incredibly meaningful to me. And to be able to share that through the book and through meeting other runners and helping other people cross their first start lines or walk over their third finish line and, you know, catch them as they're in their weeping, sobbing, sweaty hug. And, you know, it's just, that's really why I do this. That's why I keep running. Cause I can't get enough of that. I absolutely love the running community and being able to support other runners, because we all do it for each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know any other sport that's quite like that.
Yeah, I don't either. As we're wrapping up, for anybody that's interested, when is there an estimate? I know I know enough about from people that have written books that the first edit doesn't necessarily mean that there's a set deadline of when the book's coming out. But is there an idea, or do you have a date kind of theoretically for when the book will be out?
In a perfect world, I'd love to get it out by the end of the year in terms of holiday season. But I've already got, you know, I'm launching the Canadian version of it. Not that that means I'm putting a bunch of A's in there, but meaning that I'll launch it in Canada next summer.
Okay.
So there's some time there, but I'd like to get it out here in the U.S., as soon as possible. I have this idea in my head that, you know, oh, I've run the 50th, so the momentum is there. But because it's not specifically just about running, and it's not like every chapter is a race, mm-hmm. I think there's also a little bit of room for getting it out, you know, in the next few months. So, and I'm trying to use my running lessons with a book in that it doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just, you know, none of us who run a lot of races have perfect races every single time.
Period.
Or ever, right? What is perfect? Yeah. Why would that be the goal? So, so my goal is to, like, you know, be proud of the content, and the stories, and get it out sooner rather than later, and see where it builds from there.
Well, gotcha. Well, maybe it is. I mean, I feel like we could keep going for, I've scratched barely the surface of things that I thought we might talk about. So I feel like we keep going for another hour or two, but at some point we're gonna have to wrap this thing up. So maybe once we kind of know more about when the book's coming out, maybe we'll bring back and do a round two or something down the road.
That'd be great. I'd love that. That would be awesome.
All right. Well, guys, until then, you can get your fix of what Gretchen's got going on and read. She's got so many race reports and whatnot on her website. Again, iwonderwoman.com. And again, Instagram, Twitter, social media at Run Grateful, RUNGRATEFUL. Show notes for this episode, disruns.com/341. We'll have links to you know, the place to connect with her and some links to some posts and races and race recaps and just some of her story. So anything that you want to check out, you can find those links on the show notes for this episode. Gretchen, congratulations, first and foremost, 10 races in a year. That's impressive. You know, 53 races overall, that's impressive. And there's no, you know, at least for me, that's only 26 and a half fulls. Like it's 53 races. Good job. 53 half marathons. That's awesome. It's an incredible achievement. And, you know, wish nothing but the best. Hope that the health continues to even get better, you know, as you continue to run, continue to feel well, and continue to just keep doing what you do and doing what you love. And can't wait to see what the future holds, and looking forward to reconnecting at some point in the not too distant future as well.
Thank you so much, Denny. I really appreciate it. This has really been enjoyable and my pleasure and my honor to talk with you. I'm so just grateful that you're doing this. It's fantastic.
Well, thanks, Gretchen. Nothing but the best, and we'll talk soon.
Great.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Gretchen and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode. What was your biggest takeaway? For me, I think the thing that stood out was kind of at the end there when we were talking about the title of the half marathon and, you know, just the power of words and how any race is in and of itself, you know, sufficient. It's not half of something. But what really stood out was a couple of the stories that Gretchen mentioned about just the self-sabotage and the way that she's heard other runners talk to themselves about, oh, I only ran the half, or, you know, if only I ran the full and not the half, I would X, Y, Z. I hope that you don't do that. And the reason this stood out to me is that I don't do that as much about the half marathon or the 5K or whatever. I don't do that with my running in terms of, you know, I'm not a good enough runner because I'm only doing this, because I'm not doing ultra marathons, I'm not a real runner, or anything like that. But where I do fall victim to that kind of self talk and the very negative self talk is with work. I never get enough done. You know, I never get enough accomplished on any particular day. And it's not a good place to be, you know, when you're always beating yourself up. So that's what stood out to me, is just you know, that I need to look at areas outside of just my life and maybe talk positively to myself a little bit more, a whole lot more frequently, and realize that some days the best I can do is going to have to be enough, even if it's not as much as maybe I wanted to do that particular day. So anyway, that was my takeaway, and I'd love to know what it was for you. What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head over to the show notes for this particular episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/341, and leave a comment there. And let me know what you think. It's always great to see those comments and to hear that interaction and to foster it there. So DizRuns.com/341. And don't forget, if you want to hear more about the Coterie or find out more or have any questions about it, you can head over to DizRuns.com/Coterie. And also, you can obviously always ask any questions, and I'll do my best to just help you with an honest answer and let you make the choice of whether or not joining our group might be the right thing for you. But that's it for today, guys. So thanks for your time. Thanks for taking me with you wherever you were today. Whatever you're doing, it's always a pleasure to be in your earballs a little bit. So I hope you have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon. But until then, take care, guys.